Hi guys, this is Nadia Hilker. I'm playing Magna on The Walking Dead, and you guys are listening to The Walking Dead Talks Through. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast, and I'm sending you all my love. Bye!
Hello, my name is Cassie McClincy. I play Lydia on The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through. Yay!
Hey there, guys. I'm Callan McAuliffe, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register, and I play Lara on The Walking Dead. You're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, survivors, welcome to episode 121 of The Walking Dead Talk. I'm Kyle.
I'm Brian.
I'm LT.
Hey. We will be covering The Walking Dead Season 10, Episode 20, titled Splinter. We didn't get any feedback from The Walking Dead Season 10, Episode 19, titled One More, so we will just go straight into this week's episode. All right, let's go into The Walking Dead Season 10, Episode 20, titled Splinter, written by Julia Rutschman and Vivia Say. Julia Rutschman is co-executive producer. She has also written Season 10, Episode 8, The World Before. That's when Dante attacked Rosita and is later killed by Gabriel. And then Michonne goes off with Virgil. Season 10, Episode 11, Morningstar, co-written with Vivia Say, and this is where Eugene gets the location to meet with Stephanie. The battle for the hilltop begins. And Season 10, Episode 15, The Tower, which was obviously the finale-ish, co-written by Kevin Diebold, and that's where we meet Princess, and Beta heads towards the tower. She also written episodes of The Assistant, The Troop, Covert Affairs, seven episodes?
Yeah, she's written seven. She wrote seven episodes of Covert Affairs.
Nice. And then she also did American Odyssey and The Sun, five episodes of that.
Yeah, that's that Pierce Brosnan show that was on AMC.
Vivian Say is a producer.
And I just put in the notes here. Yeah, I know what Hardwick said, because he called her a supervising producer. So that's obviously in season 11. She must have become a supervising producer. But I went and looked specifically in the credits, and she is listed as a producer.
Producer.
What does that mean? It's just they go up rings on the totem pole, basically, as they go along. So
yeah. And she also was written for Season 9, Episode 7, Stradivarius, Season 9, Episode 14, Scars, and that one was Michonne and Daryl, Get Scarred by the Kids. That was a good episode.
Yeah.
Season 10, Episode 11, Morningstar with Julia Rutschman, and Season 10, Episode 13, What We Become, which was the last Michonne episode. So we've got a good team here.
Yeah.
It was directed by Laura Belsey. This is her fifth episode directing The Walking Dead. She also directed Season 9, Episode 15, The Calm Before. And that's the People in the Pikes episode, which rest in peace, Tara, Enid, Henry.
Yeah, heck of a first episode, too.
Yeah.
You know, to come to The Walking Dead, like, that's a pretty pivotal episode.
I'm sure they're like, hey, this is going to be your first episode. And we're going to put heads on pikes. It's like, how do you like that? Well, she also did Season 10, Episode 5, What It Always Is, which Negan has a groupie episode.
I didn't know what else to call it.
That's kind of funny, though. Season 10, Episode 15, The Tower. And that's that one that ended up being the end of Season 10B, which because the last episode wasn't finished. And then the last week's Season 10, Episode 19, One More. She also directed Season 10, Episode 22. Here's Negan. Yep. 28 directing credits. Also directed several episodes of Criminal Minds. Love that show. Arrow, Queen of the South, and SWAT, among many others.
Worth saying, the way that IMDb counts directing credits is like they'll lump in multiple episodes of things as a single credit. So I don't quite understand how they do it, but they list her as 28 directing credits. So we'll go by that.
By that. The description of this week's episode is Eugene, Ezekiel, Yumiko, and Princess are captured and separated by the mysterious troopers that surround them at the rail yard. Claustrophobic with mounting anxiety, Princess struggles with memories of her traumatic past and plans to escape. All right, well, let's go into our ratings. LT, what'd you give this episode?
Well, I gave this one a 7.5 out of 10. Well, the first rule of Princess Club.
that's a good one.
Yep. Well, I gave it a 7 at first, but when I did a rewatch, it was like I definitely was more into it because I think a lot of the time the captions really help.
Yeah.
But so 8.5 King Z Superhero Punch. I had to put that in there because that's the first thing I thought of when I saw him punch that guy. I wanted those graphics.
Biff. Bam. Socko.
Yeah. I gave it 8 naked princesses for obvious reasons because she was naked and she calls herself princess or has the name of princess.
All right. Well, let's go into our listeners' ratings. We did just get one from Glennis from Toronto, and she gave it an 8 out of 10 scary action figures come to life. I'm guessing that's the stormtroopers.
Yeah, I don't know who else it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, they were definitely... Yeah. All right. Well, let's go into our awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce!
And we get awesome sauce from Glynis from Toronto. And she says, the Commonwealth interrogation tactics were pretty sneaky and extreme. So that stormtrooper let Princess overpower him on purpose to get her to drop her guard? That's a good question. I caught that on the second watch, too, where it was kind of like he... just at the end was all like, all right, that's what I wanted to hear. Let's go. And then doors open and we see the hoods.
Yep.
All right. Well, that was it for our listeners. Awesome sauce. So let's go into ours. Brian, you have some?
Well, the Fight Club moment, you mentioned it, LT, but in your rating. But that's what Hardwick called it on Talking Dead. And I hadn't even thought of it in that. It's been such a long time since I've seen Fight Club, but I love that movie. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think of it in terms of Fight Club. But yeah, when I heard him say that, it's like, yeah, that was pretty much a Fight Club moment. A couple things that I had, picked up on second watch that I didn't notice on first watch is the trooper, for lack of a better name for him, who's getting beaten up by Princess / Ezekiel. and I call the Ezekiel head case. He never looks at Ezekiel the whole time he's talking to Princess. And I like noticed that afterwards. And I thought I should have noticed this. That was a clue that this was all in her head or, that there was no Ezekiel there. It was all her. And so there was that. And then shortly after that, was when Ezekiel said, no one's going to hurt me anymore as he's punching the trooper on the ground. And then we kind of get the moment that where it's finally revealed that, these people that she's seeing, these friends of hers, they're not actually there. So, and of course, Ezekiel, he wasn't like really acting like the Ezekiel we know. So it made sense. And speaking of not acting like yourself, the moment shortly after with Ezekiel was kind of like after commercial break in the zombies in railroad garb. That was pretty funny. And in fact, I didn't catch this on first watch either, but as Princess is walking away from the fence, one of the walkers says, "Come back for me."
Yeah, I totally missed that one too.
Yeah, it was hysterical.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed, like, I know some people, and we'll get to that soon, did not care to get any, you know, examination of Princess here. But like I said last week, to me, you have to remember these episodes were never planned. This was not what we were supposed to see right now. We were basically, if things had gone the way that they were supposed to, we'd be near the end of season 11, and we would probably be getting at the end of Walking Dead here. Like, either it was going to end on season 11 or end on season 12, right? And they changed everything because of the because of COVID. So we have to remember that that's what these episodes are for, and they're, you know, they're done under certain restrictions. And we certainly see some of the restrictions of it in this episode, but these have been character building episodes, and I like character building. Can you say, what the hell kind of character building do we need after 10 seasons? Yes, you can. But I think we have to remember that we're getting some Walking Dead. They're good character examinations. We're getting to see more of a character we really didn't know about, and done in a smart way, I think, certainly explains a lot about her character that and her quirks and that we didn't know before. So to me, this is good. I liked the last episode a lot more than I liked this one. I like this one fine, but this is how I'm taking it. It's like, these are not these, if you're looking for the plot to continue, that's not what these episodes are for. These episodes are just to whet our appetite until we actually get episodes that are part of the season, right? So that's how I look at them, and for that, I enjoy it. So anyway, I just wanted to get off my soapbox here, but that's
And it was a good point that they could give us a few character moments without it being the kind of character moments we've come to expect. You know, this isn't a T-Dog Princess episode.
Right. Right.
This is give us some background, give us a little bit more about this character.
And don't kill
honestly,
her.
Yeah. And we didn't really get a lot of building out of in the regular season.
Right.
Yeah. No, I have to agree completely, because it's just like everything changed. And so it's just like again, this is like 10.2, you know, it's like they decided like, hey, we're going to just try to get something, but we're, this is not going to be, you know, 11. It's going to be 10.2, you know, like 10, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, for like having such a break, I mean, we can go into this later, but yeah, it's just like, I have to say, you know, I'm kind of like, I'll just go into my awesome sauce. It was like actually when rewatching it, it was like when I first watched it live, then it was just like, I kind of had like, I was kind of half watching it. And then it was just kind of like, oh, okay. Oh, there's something's going on. Like, oh yeah, she's just crazy or like whatever. So, I mean, I wasn't really even trying to like even in the mental state to actually pick anything up. I was just kind of like, okay, it's just on, just watching it. But watching it on the second time, it was like actually being able to actually watch it. I have no, you know, interruptions or distractions. And I have to say, it was just like the whole episode, like, I love like, you know, they were showing us all the different levels of our coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of like getting this first glimpse into like, who is this person?
Right.
Obviously something's going on. You know, she even goes into it just about her family and this and that. And I really just, I I really got like hooked in of like learning more about her and just about her psyche. And, you know, we knew she was quirky and crazy, but now it's like, oh wow, she's like she's got a lot of issues. And so it's like, but it's like, that's like by the end of it, it's like, then you realize that, you know, that she's like, she's been alone this whole time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, then it starts making sense. It's like, oh my gosh, it's like, what would someone do? Like that, you know, deal with basically all the insanity that we know of this world, you know, here she's basically been alone this whole time. How would that affect you? You know? And I thought the whole line at the end when she's talking to the guard, when she realized she's like, okay, you know, I think he even asked her, like she comes back before she tried to leave, or like after she tried to leave and comes back to basically say, sorry. And he's all like, oh, so who's talking now? Okay. That's funny.
Well, she was kind of having that survivor, talking to the volleyball moment.
Yeah, no, totally. And it's like, and you could see that throughout different parts of the episode where like we never really saw Yumiko, and like just how she was responding to Princess. It almost, that's when I could tell it's like something's different here, because it's like, she's just like, I want to help. But then, you know, it's like, the responses from Yumiko is like, no, just like calm down, you know, don't do it. So it's like her own inner monologue basically is working, and we're just seeing it being represented as her talking to Yumiko. But I wanted to get to this quote because I just thought at the end, this just summed it all up, and I thought it was kind of like a really, really nice little touch.
I'm not crazy if that's what you're thinking. I mean, there's the ADHD, the anxiety, the PTSD, the depression, the crushing loneliness, and the active imagination that helps me cope with all of that. But like, maybe that's the only sane response to an insane world. You know what I'm saying?
And to me, I was like, yep, there you go. That's the whole, like, that was kind of like the whole theme of this whole entire episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, 2020.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, it's like, I don't know. And the way it just rolled off her tongue, she was just like, oh yeah, it's like, but I'm not crazy.
Right. And we don't know how anybody else would have reacted had they not had a group.
Oh, well, we've seen how Morgan like reacted earlier on, not very well.
And it seems like she was in Pittsburgh, right? That's how, what we gathered from.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the whole city of Pittsburgh must have been evacuated, and somehow she, I don't know, camped out or something, but it never got infested. So,
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not bringing that up as like, you know, like a weak sauce or anything. I'm just trying to understand where she comes from.
Right. We also know that, what was it, from some of the other lore, that they had Operation Cobalt, where the military had bombed the cities.
Oh, yeah.
So for all we know, you know, maybe Pittsburgh was actually pretty cleared out and she was just somewhere else, you know, in town and just missed all of it.
Right.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, she just was definitely, we know that she's was alone. And so that's got to take some time whenever we're like, what, 10, 15 years in? And the only other thing I had was just like, and I mentioned it before with Yumiko, it was just like the whole play on the other characters with her. And just like, because I almost felt like that she was like kind of acting like a child, and she's just like, oh, no, I want to help. Oh, no, I want, like, you know, I'll take care of you. Or like, oh, no, they said that, you know, they're helping her. So they're helping her. So everything's great. And it was just like, you know, Yumiko was just saying, like, at least about her voice, because we never really did see her. It was just like,
there's a reason for that.
Right. And we'll get to it. I saw that. But I thought in the way they were showing it, it's like you just heard her voice and you never saw her. So it was like, to me, that's where it's kind of a tell of being like, okay, well, she's just talking to something, but we don't know. But then it was just the reaction. It was just like, she kept saying, like, no, just do what they say. Like, she said, like, oh, no, just calm down. Like, take a moment. And then we see Princess doing her counting and, like, you know, saying the cities, I guess the capitals of states or whatever. So you could tell, like, she's dealing, and then there's flashbacks of, like, of what she just saw of everybody being basically beaten and, like, taken captive. And so it's kind of like her mind, it's like, yeah, I knew then she was kind of having some kind of mental break or whatever. It's kind of, and her mind was like playing both sides. And like her getting really like upset or like, no, I'm like, we're doing this, we're escaping, or like, we've got to do something, to being like, oh, no, calm down. You know, like, but it being referenced from the other, you know, person. So I don't know. In that sense, I thought this episode, I thought they did a really good job of that. I just kind of wondered if, like, if I wasn't paying attention and it wasn't just completely just like focused on it with, you know, with like, you know, captions going, that if that translated to, you know, just a regular viewer. But I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was good. All right. Well, that was all I had. LT, did you have anything?
Well, I mean, you guys hit probably everything that I was thinking of as far as an awesome sauce. And I mean, my overall thing was, for such a short episode, it was pretty good. I mean, I watched it, I think, three times. And even with the three, it still, there were parts that I picked up on the rewatches that I didn't really hit the first time. But it was not a bad episode. I mean, it was good. I just am not nearly as excited about it as you are, Kyle. But I think that her inner dialogue with Eugene was very Eugene-y. Mm-hmm. whether that was actually him talking to her or not.
Yeah, it was very Eugene-y. That's the way to put it. Yeah.
This was very, very Eugene-like. I mean, I enjoyed the scene with Ezekiel and the two walkers. I enjoyed it more after hearing what he had to say, what Kerry Payton had to say about it on Talking Dead. But it was really, that was sort of like the icing on the cake of, yeah, she's having a break.
Yeah.
But I mean, I didn't rate it really high because there's some issues that I have just from the entirety of it. But I mean, I liked it. I mean, yeah. It wasn't one that I wouldn't watch again.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can't disagree or agree. It's like,
yeah, it just wasn't like, wow.
Yeah, I don't think any of these episodes have been really necessarily wow, but right. I think at least coming from my side, on my end, it was the fact that I felt like I didn't give it really that much attention the first time I watched it, to when I did watch it the second time, when I started catching everything, that I kind of started appreciating it more, just because I'm like, oh, you know, like,
yeah,
this is a very interesting way to kind of dive into her character of someone we don't know anything about other than just that one episode, you know, or I guess, you know, I guess it's been one episode, was the first time we met her. But, you know, I don't know. It was, you know, they did a good job with
handling it. And it really did work from the standpoint of, we really didn't get a lot about her there at the end of the actual season. So it was good that they gave us this, you know, to kind of invest a little bit more in the character, because that was one of the complaints that I had about when, you know, we got that flux of new people there when Yumiko and that bunch joined the crew. We got bits of background, but we really didn't get a lot. So
yeah.
At least with Princess, we got more than we would have otherwise.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with that for sure. All righty. Well, if that is it for our awesome sauce. Let's go into our weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
We didn't have any from our listeners, but we did for ourselves. Did you, what'd you have, LT?
Well, for my week, it sort of dovetails in with something I guess Brian's going to talk about eventually, or my thing was, okay, so they've basically stripped her down, you know, hung her up. We're doing the whole strip search prison shower scene. You know, are you bitten? Do you have any bites? And it was sort of bizarrely gratuitous to have the naked princess scene. But then the next time you see her, she's back in her same clothes.
Yeah.
And, you know, just editorial content for me. If you're going to do that to somebody, typically if you take off all what they were wearing and you give them the prison shower and delousing, then you don't put them back in their same old clothes.
Yeah.
So that part kind of made me go,
And they're not washed either.
No.
Here's your clothes. We washed them for you.
Yeah. When she was in the car during the interrogation, I guess I just was sort of going, oh, we're going with the whole faceless interrogator asking questions trope, which, at least for Brian and I, you know, we had our run of faceless admirals on Discovery.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was just the, why aren't they showing his face? You know, and I guess it would have been extra tropey if then they would have gone to the whole good cop, bad cop interrogation ploy.
Yeah.
Which I guess they did in the end whenever, you know, she beat the stuffing out of, you know, poor Rufus there. And and he was playing the, you know, hey, man, I'm just a new guy. I just work here. I don't know nothing. But I guess just from my experience, if you're going to have the one person that's the hard ass, that's going to be, you know, not take any crap off of them, then the other ploy is you have the sympathetic interrogator. The one who's right. going to do the look, this is just what we do. We've got to ask these questions. You know, if you just play ball, then everything will get, you know.
Yep. Yep. Fits right into what I was going to say.
Yep.
And the one thing I wanted to bring up is some of this, though, can we trust anything that we see in this episode after we kind of it's revealed that she's an unreliable narrator, just like in Fight Club. In Fight Club, you know, what's his name?
Tyler
Durden is never there, right? It's, I forget the character's name, but Edward Norton's character, you know, is the one that is, you know, he's the one that's doing all this stuff. So, spoiler for a movie from 22 years ago, but anyway, hard to believe it's been that long. Anyway. So the interrogation and all that could have been much different. That could have been her interpretation of it, versus like he may never have said, you know, you stupid bitch or anything. That could have been her, like, just remembering the stepfather or whatever, and something he would say. So whether he did or not, I don't know, but it kind of fits into what I was going to bring up, and I'm going to go out of order because it fits here. So we'll let you finish. So and I want to give some of I want to give a lot of the credit to this from the Walking Dead cast. I can't remember who said it. It was either Jason I don't think it was Lucy, but it was Jason Lucy and what's his name? James Frazier. He was on there this week, and they were talking about normally when you're in this kind of situation, and LT talked about this, it's like if it's standard procedure, they'd say, here's a deal. We're going to do this, then this, then this, and then we're going to ask you a few questions, and then finally we're going to get to this, and if everything checks out, we'll do this. You know, we'll bring you to our home or whatever. But that was never done. Instead, it's all very antagonistic. And that was brought in, I think, specifically just to bring out false or somewhat false conflict. Like, if this is what a, you know, benign civilization would do, I don't think they would do it this way. So to me, it's like false drama. Right? So that's, but I want LT, your take on it.
It's, yeah. And by where it happened in the show, we didn't get the payoff to this is all in her head, or this is not all in her head, but, you know, this is sort of like part of her construct and dealing with it.
Right.
So, yeah, you're 100% on with the unreliable narrator. We don't really know what happened.
Right. Right. And, you know, it's worth saying, like, because you've talked about a lot of times you were in the Army, but you were also full-time cop for how long?
Well, full-time 10 years, but totally it's almost 30 now.
Yeah. Wow. So this man knows something about, you know, police procedure. So anyway, like that's kind of right though, right? They wouldn't do it like this and like get all antagonistic. They would, like, maybe that would be something you would do in times of war, but if it's more of like an interrogation kind of thing, you'd think it would be more kind of laying out the rules. Because that's
a lot of it has to do with who you're talking to. If they're going to be angry and uncooperative, then, you know, you can adjust the play a little bit. But the key of it is, you know, you want to establish some kind of rapport, whether it's, you know, we got you dead to rights and you just need to go ahead and tell us, or if you've got to kind of stroke their ego or do different things, because at the end, you kind of know and you're trying to get them to go ahead and tell you something. In this case, I think they're probably just trying to find out, you know, are you a pirate? Are you a bad guy? You know, what have your circumstances been previously? Are you so freaking out of your gourd that we don't want to let you in with all our poor, innocent, happy civilians?
Right. Yep. So you also mentioned it in your awesome sauce that it was pretty good for a short episode. Now, was it ever short? Now, I watched it on AMC Premiere, which, by the way, will be the last episode that I watch on AMC Premiere, because my AMC Premiere expires as of Thursday. So I will be switching to AMC Plus for the rest of the season and into Fear, which will be interesting. So anyway, but yeah, only 40 minutes and 43 seconds. So, like, you guys watched it live, right?
Yeah.
So why was it so short? Was there like some kind of sneak peek or something that like filled up that time, or was it just filled with commercials?
It was commercials. There were a couple, like, you know, Fear, like bumpers or whatever. And then there was the basically next episodes at the end. But I mean, I thought there was, I did think that there seemed to be, like, I would basically, you know, fast forward on my YouTube TV, whatever. And it was kind of like where I would see the marker. I'm like, oh, wow. I'm like, I'm already like more than halfway done. And then I'd like, you know, skip through commercials until I get to the next, you know, next thing. And it just, yeah, I think they just filled up with like some promos and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I watched it on broadcast. And you're right. There were several fear bumpers. They did the thing for, you know, Norman's show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a little more commercial heavy.
Yeah.
I think they had the extended sneak peek for Fear.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. I mean, it definitely was definitely commercials or promos a lot of whenever I was skipping. And the next thing you know, I was kind of like, I've only just been feeling like I've been just starting to watch this, and I realized at the bottom, like, oh, I'm already halfway through.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was the one thing, how short it was. And the other thing I was going to say is that it was very COVID-y. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you know, you could see this probably more than any of the other episodes so far really showed that it was filmed during COVID. Like, for example, I had wondered this, and I finally had it confirmed. Eleanor Matsura, she is not in this episode, like, in person. She is in episode by voice only. And because, you know, she lives in the UK, right? So she couldn't come back to shoot her scenes. So the way that they did that, they used the stunt double for her scenes. And, you know, when we see her with the hood on at the end, that's not her either. And right. You can see, like, when they show her all of her scenes, like, she's either got her back turned or she's very blurry in the background, you know, so it's obvious that it wasn't her. And the rest of the drama kind of takes place very, with the exception of maybe when she and pseudo Ezekiel are punching out the trooper. Okay, stormtrooper, might as well call him by. Anyway, that's about the only time where you see any kind of like contact there. So there's really not a lot of, it felt very COVID-y. That's what I called it. Just more than any other episode. Because almost all of the episode was just her. And, you know, pretty much like everything that we saw, as far as I know, like, there was no like open area for her to see to the next car. She wasn't able to get out to go to Eugene's car. Like, none of that actually happened. That was all in her mind, you know? So, but anyway, regardless of that, it was all COVID-y, like I say. Like, there could have been, you know, like a plexiglass between the two for all we know, and they wouldn't have had any contact there.
Yeah. No, this, I mean, and obviously they shoot things, they can shoot anything out of order and whenever, so this could have been one of the first ones that they shot whenever, you know, earlier last year.
Could have been, or, I mean, it just could have been, like, the way that they did them is they shot all six of these episodes. They had like an A team and a B team. And so they were basically shooting these episodes all at the same time, from the way I understand it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that was the thing. It suffered most, I think, from COVID. The fact that, you know, they focused on Princess, which was good that they were able to do it, but they focused on her because it made it most economical, I think, and less, more manageable. So,
yeah.
But I still appreciated it, though.
Yeah. And when you look at all the scenes, you notice that they never had more than three people
right
together.
Yeah. Right.
Nope. Totally true. Agreed.
That's it for me.
Cool. Yeah. And my only thing was just basically it's, and actually now that I think about it, it's like, this is what the Commonwealth soldiers look like, right? I thought the stormtrooper uniforms, it was just so, to me, a little bit like just cosplay because they looked exactly like Star Wars stormtrooper uniforms. Like if you, at the end, the guy, like he turns around after getting the handcuffs off and it's just like, all the placements of everything, it just it looks exactly like stormtroopers.
Where I have to kind of say, to me, it looks like full contact martial arts padded suits.
Okay, I don't know what those look like. I know it's like, hey, it's white. It's just like the different like breastplate and like where the things, you know,
yeah,
attach. And then that's the first thing I thought is like a stormtrooper.
Is that like the Ambo Jitsu? anyone that watched Star Trek The Next Generation would remember that.
Well, the difference is, and this is where I have to put my geek hat on. I have a good friend of mine who has stormtrooper armor, and That's not the way it goes together. I mean, it looks the same. What it reminds me more of was the suit that my daughter had when she was taking jiu-jitsu, you know, or the Red Man suit that we use when we're doing full contact, full speed, you know, defensive tactics training at the PD. Because when he had his helmet off and he had his hood down, you could kind of see that it was like foam. It was like a thick collar around his neck. And to me, it looks like a padded suit you'd wear for, you know, some kind of martial arts stuff, because it's, you know, vinyl covered thick foam and the way it's strapped to him. So it's like, they do that so when if they're having to push a bunch of walkers that they can't get clawed or scratched.
And little claws that they have on their forearms.
The little yeah. Batman claws on the cuffs there.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I'm thinking of is why they're white is so then, you know, you can see the blood on it easier, or see if they've gotten bitten. Of course, I know they're wearing a black jumper underneath. So, yeah. but that was what I took more of. You know, they've raided some dojo's pad shop.
Yeah.
More than stormtroopers.
Right. Well, but when you put it that way, then yeah, I mean, that makes more sense. But it's like, for someone that has no idea, like, what those look like, I was just like, it just looks very hokey. And then it's like, and without what you just said, it's like, how, like, did they raid some Hollywood warehouse of like X Star Wars and they say, hey, this will be like a perfect thing that we can use to protect ourselves, and we'll just put little red stripes on them? But I mean, what you're saying makes sense, but from a viewer that doesn't know that,
totally agree.
They look goofy.
Well, and if you're going to have like ride armor, like what I'm used to, it's usually either black or blue. Or OD green, you know. It's like air quote tactical colors.
It's camo.
The only time I ever see white, like I said, the only time I ever see white padded suits is for, you know, jiu-jitsu or karate or something like that.
Yeah. Well. And that's the only thing I was like saying. It's like, isn't there from the comic? Don't they look like this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And I, I remembered that way after the fact whenever I wrote this in my notes, because I was like, oh, that's right. There's that cover where it was kind of something Commonwealth. And it was like, oh, yeah, they do have kind of like that same kind of striping and like whatever. But obviously, if you know the comics or if don't, it's like, these are the Commonwealth. So at least we're getting to that point. Alrighty. They still look stormtroopers. All right. Well, let's go into what sauce.
What?
We got one from Glynis, and she says, really believe that Ezekiel was really there. I was shocked that person's had been alone all along and done the assaulting all by herself. Her coping mechanism is really out there, but I should have twigged the fact when Ezekiel was imaginary with his two walker mates when Princess was going to flee the scene at the fence. Yep. Thank you, Glynis. All right. Well, that was all we got from our listeners. Let's go into what sauce for us. And LT, you want to start?
Well, after Brian dovetailed in with his COVID-y, I could tell that the scene that they did in the boxcars for the capture stuff was not in the same place that they shot the original capture. Mm-hmm. Just the trees were different. The ground was different. The tracks were different. It was like, well, we'll just find a spot that's got these train cars that are on a siding that we can use. Cause to me, it didn't look like the same place. It didn't have the same layout, didn't have the same feel. It didn't have the same industrialness. So that was my only thing, is that for me, I was going, wait a minute.
And
I totally dig the fact that if that's where they had to shoot, that's where they had to shoot. But it was one of those subtle cues for me that I just was going, this is not the same place.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they had to make some changes. They did that. They've done that with in earlier seasons, where wasn't it like, oh, this is the same highway that was in season 4, episode 3. And like, that's like where,
yeah,
they've done that kind of stuff where you kind of like, oh, yeah, they just reused the same area. But yeah, it is what it is, I guess. All right. Well, I'll go into mine. I kind of was going back and forth between if this should be a what sauce or just more feedback, but I guess what, because it was kind of like, what's going on? It was just like when Princess was hiding outside like Eugene's car or boxcar, mm-hmm. like the guards were going by and you could hear them on the radio and they were saying, north side's all clear, cars A, B, and C all quiet, going to the south side. And then I was like, okay. I'm like, how many people do they have locked up? I mean, we know Ezekiel was not seemingly, if there's three cars, then that would have been Yumiko, Eugene, and Princess. But it was just kind of like, okay, how many people, like, how big is this outfit? Like, how many people are they capturing to, like, interrogate and say, like, are you friend or foe? So, I don't know. I thought that was just kind of, like, a little interesting.
Or how many guys with ham radios has this girl been catfishing, trying to get people to come visit her?
They hear Stephanie. It's like, ah, Stephanie, again. Sending people our way. The second part was Princess. I thought that was kind of funny because the more I kept watching it, the more I was like, okay. It's like when she was trying to climb under the fence, but then she gets stuck because the gun was on her back. Like it was kind of weird because it even looked like she was making sure that it was like on her back so that when she climbed under the fence that, oh, I got stuck. Cause then when she like went like, you know, backed out of that, like she puts the gun down or like lets it fall to her side. And I'm like, well, that's exactly what you need to do to get through that gate. But I just felt like it was like, this must have been where they're like, they yell action and she was thinking to herself like, oh, make sure that gun's on, you know, my back so that it catches the fence. And I don't know. I kept watching it and I was like, It looks exactly what she's doing. She's like making sure that like how many takes did they have to do on that scene?
Yeah. And that's precisely the reason you don't crawl under fences with a slung rifle on your back.
I know. It's just kind of like you could have put it underneath. I don't know. It just seemed very funny that she was taking so much care to make sure that was on her back.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's all I had for my what's. Brian, do you have anything?
Just, I noticed that, how do you say her name? Paola, I guess. Paola. Lazaro. Her pits were shaved. And I thought to myself, how could she shave her pits in the zombie apocalypse? It's something, you know, that I always noticed, but it was just, I mean, oh, okay, maybe she would, but it just, I noticed it right away.
Well, and I was going to say that's come up. Somebody else was talking about something of that nature, about things you wouldn't do in the zombie apocalypse. But my point would be, if I had clippers, that's one of the things that I'd do. I mean, when I was going on long hiking trips, I make sure that, you know, you clip the hair down because it gets stinky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like at the start of things, you know, COVID, I hadn't gotten my hair cut in a while, and by September it was getting pretty nasty. So because I still didn't feel comfortable going to get a haircut, I just like, screw it. And I shaved it all off. So ever since then, for the last 6 months, I've been bald. So, and made sense to me, still does.
Yeah.
So, I got, nice.
I got a set of clippers. So I did the number two guide buzzy all over, mainly because the last time I shaved my head, you know, somebody couldn't decide if I looked like G. Gordon Liddy or Mr. Clean. So I said, I'll leave a little bit of hair.
I could see the G. Gordon Liddy for you.
All right. Well, let's go into our sad and aw sauce.
Aww.
We didn't have any from our listeners, but we do have for ourselves. So I guess LT, you seem to always be on the top of the list.
Yes, I am.
Go for it.
Well, my sad sauce was at the end of the episode, knowing how Princess is. As far as, you know, we've seen, you know, her psyche and how her mind works, just thinking that being put in that isolation cell was possibly the worst thing they could have done to her. Mm-hmm. Because after she's had a chance to start talking to people that are real people. And it's funny that after all this, I just remembered the line from the episode where Yumiko, Eugene, and Ezekiel found her. And I think she made a crack of, well, are you a hallucination? That after she's had a chance to start actually dealing with real people again, then they put her in a boxcar by herself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, it took me a while to sort of start warming up and getting the whole Fight Club vibe, that all this stuff was just sort of her inner narrative going on. But after all that, I could see where, you know, locking her in a box could be the worst possible outcome for her. Because at least before, when she was isolated, she was out in the open and she could roam around and, you know, do her zombie art and whatever else. But the fact that she's, you know, she's in the state she's in, and they've basically taken her away from these people she's gotten to know and, you know, locked her up in an isolation cell.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm wondering if I thought, because she does say after she does her little spiel that she says small dark spaces do bad things to my head.
Right.
And so
understatement.
Yeah. And I know there's some stuff in the comic about her past, you know, that she, her stepfather and stepbrother would either lock her up or whatever. But again, it's like, we don't know that if you just watch the TV show, you know, but it was like, I guess that was kind of like, oh, her acknowledging of something that is like, what is it that like happened to you that you, that this claustrophobia and this being like, this would cause this kind of a reaction.
Yeah. And you would assume that even normal, well-adjusted people are not going to do well when they're put in the cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with a zombie apocalypse trauma, that's going to be on top of it. I mean, you put me in there now and I'd be like, okay, I have to deal with this, but not after if it's like 10 years of dealing with dead and like all that goes with that. So.
And that was my point. It's just that knowing at the end of the episode, knowing what we know about her, and you go back and think about it, and it's like, man, that's possibly one of the worst things they could have done to her.
Yeah. And have they not run into something similar to deal with it? But
well, the last time I remember being locked up in a train car was at Terminus.
Yeah.
Yep. But they locked everybody up in a train car.
Yes, it did.
Together.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. It's definitely more power with numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cool deal. All right. Well, I just, the only thing I kind of had to say was, and this is also like going back over it, it was like, because we don't know what was real or not real in this whole episode. And Brian, you making that point was like, that actually is, you know, kind of opens up a lot of like, oh yeah, yeah, there's a lot of this might have not even happened. It was just in her head.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that we pretty much do know that had happened was, and this is kind of my sad sauce, I didn't write it down, but we know that she had a pretty traumatic childhood. And, you know, that's sad to me. And, you know, had to deal with loneliness then and since the apocalypse. So, you know.
Yeah. No, yeah. And that goes, it's like whenever she was talking to Ezekiel with the walkers, you know, outside the gate. And like, he was telling her, it's like, oh, she's a survivor. It's like, but you know, you're a survivor. It's like, take your freedom, like go, like leave. Like, that's what you do. But then she says something, she's like, she said that there was like, the good ones. And she's like, maybe not mom or Dougie, which I'm assuming maybe that's her stepdad.
Must be.
Yeah. But then she said, Miss Travis, Sammy and his people and them, which was obviously our group. And it was kind of like, okay, so was she completely alone or like this whole time? Or is she referring to people that she actually had met? And then like, you know, like, I don't know. It just kind of like, it felt sad because I was like, did she really have like some interactions with other people and then it went terribly bad or something, which just added to her trauma? I don't know.
I thought that maybe Mrs. Travis was a teacher.
That's, I kind of had that thought too.
And the other person that she mentions, I'm not sure who that would be, but, you know, somebody, I don't know, like someone she knew from school or
she does talk about like, oh, the girl that like dyed her hair the first time or whatever, and like, you know, she, and that's what was interesting, because then her King Ezekiel told her, it's like, oh, those are stories that you tell yourself, and then there's the truth. And then she said, but they came back for me. And then, so it's like, you know, she is referring to our group who we know are real. And then she mentions these others, but it's like, I don't know. It was sad because I was just like the trauma in all of just that. It was like, wow. Like, yeah. I don't know. It felt so bad. Like, who knows what she's, we only know what we're being given, but you could just imagine what this life has been like for her.
Yeah, I agree. And that's all I have, too. So.
Alrighty. All right. Well, let's go into our feedback.
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Well, we have two actual voicemails from Renee from Atlanta. I'll just start off. The first one was when she watched it live, or like after, you know, when it aired. But then she went back and did a rewatch. And then the second one is about her thoughts on the rewatch. So I will start with the first one.
Hi, guys. Okay. I don't have ratings. Let me say this. 0 out of freaking 0. And I don't have an awesome sauce. I don't have a sad sauce, but I do have what the hell sauce. Like, what did I just watch? Like, seriously, what in the world? Where are we headed? Like, who gives a darn about Princess? We just met her, like, last week. Like, seriously, this, I don't know what The Walking Dead has going on, but to, I mean, why? Why? Like, I don't get it. Like, what the heck? Princess was hallucinating. She thought she was King Ezekiel. The stormtrooper, she overpowered him. She got the gun. She was leaving. She came back. I'm just baffled. Truly, I'm baffled. What in the world? Walking Dead, The Walking Dead could have kept these episodes. They're super, super, super boring. So maybe you guys will make it make sense. Right now, it's not making any sense to me. I'm like over The Walking Dead, and right now they need to kick rocks. I'm seriously, like, please, this is awful. Okay, bye.
All right, thank you, Renee. And then I'll just go into the second one, because then I had some comments on that.
Hi, guys. This is Renee again. I'm calling because I went back and I watched the episode and I still don't like it. I don't mean to be dismissive of Prince's trauma that she went through, because I did connect with Silas and he went through the same thing, abuse from his family, well, from his father, not his stepfather, but still, it was similar. And I really cared about that character. Princess, I do not. And I think it's more because of the fact that we only have one season left, which is 11. We need to be dealing with the characters, the people that we are involved with, the people that have been there from the very beginning. I was hoping to get Maggie again. I mean, we only saw Maggie once. And, you know, I feel like I'm just not happy with these episodes. I realize that you all call them bottle episodes. I mean, but I'm just, and when I listened to the podcast from last week, I realized that, you guys think totally different. Brian was saying that he's okay with it because of the because they gave us something. I don't agree with that. I understand that it's COVID. They couldn't, you know, be near each other. You know, they had to give each other 6 feet. But I feel like they should have used another character. I just don't like it. I can't get into them. I'm not happy with them. I mean, I'm a diehard Walking Dead fan. I will never leave Walking Dead. I mean, in the past, I have been upset about some of the episodes. So I'm never leaving them. I love them. But I just felt like these last 5 weeks, it was just awful. And I was hoping that this week was going to build up to something. But to me, it's like kick rocks, because I just really don't care. So I don't know if y'all are going to play this again, but again, like I said, I went back and I rewatched it to see if I could change, if I would feel differently, because like as soon as I watched it on Sunday, I was like, So I called you guys as soon as I watched it. So then I said, let me go back and rewatch it, because I listened to a couple of the podcasts and some people were saying, you know, she went through so much, which I don't mean to be dismissive, because like I said, Silas, I was very, had a lot of empathy for him and what he went through. But it's like, Princess, I just met her. I really don't care about her. So I just wanted to call you guys back and, you know, just say that again, I watched it and it still can kick rocks. Okay, bye.
Thank you, Renee, for your voicemail. I definitely want, you know, we love the feedback that you give and it's very important. And I actually have some similar thoughts that you did. I enjoyed it the second time I watched it, so we'll definitely, you know, keep it coming. We like to hear your thoughts. I totally can kind of feel where she's coming from.
I do too. Like I get it, and you know, don't take what I said last week as kind of like dismissing your thoughts about it, because I do understand it, and you made a good point, especially in the second voicemail about Maggie and seeing more of Maggie. I mean, I agree with you. This would have been a great opportunity to see more of Maggie. And aside from that first episode, we haven't seen her again. And I think that's kind of a lost opportunity here. So assuming that we don't see her in the next two, which, you know, we don't exactly know if we do or not. Maybe we will. But I think that's kind of a lost opportunity there. And I get it. Like, who would you rather have on the show, Maggie or Princess? I definitely agree with you. I would rather see more story for Maggie. But like I said last week, and I still kind of like think of it this way, this is kind of like an extended webisode, right? Like, and we're going to get into some webisode stuff, some webisode news in the news section. But to me, this is kind of like an extended webisode, so, or six webisodes. These are stories that we wouldn't have gotten. And because of that, you know, we're getting this story. Is it prime story? Is it advancing the plot? Not really. They're kind of, not only are they kind of bottle episodes, but they're like literally in a bottle. So you could you could take them out and put them away, and you could I imagine that when season 11 comes, if you had missed these last six episodes, it wouldn't have mattered, you know. But you do get some good character moments, like, you know, like last week with Aaron and Gabriel. This week with Princess, we get a little more backstory on Daryl, which obviously I think we needed, and certainly get some backstory with Maggie and what she's been dealing with. But what you said, I get it. Could they have advanced the plot? Yes, but considering they had basically already written most of season 11, from what I understand, there's not much that they could do. So I don't know. I agree with you, partially agree with you, partially agree to disagree with you. I see where you're coming from. Better than I did last week, though. So
yeah. No, and I agree. It's like, but it is kind of like, I'm looking at it in several different ways, because it's like, yes, we had, like, maybe because of COVID, it's like this messed up their whole timing,
right?
With how they had planned to have everything roll out, you know?
Yeah. And so all the way around, everything, you know, COVID has messed up everything,
right?
Everywhere, everything, you know, it's messed up people's livelihoods, people's lives. I know it messed me up a lot. And it's, you know, it's just been terrible. Just all in general. And you know, it's like I say, like, I'm happy that we're getting these episodes. Would I have rather had something more appropriate? Yes. But, you know, right. I was going to bring up one more thing, and then I'll let you fly. But I am curious what Renee's going to think of these six episodes once she gets to see the last one, which is titled Here's Negan. So, you, Renee, may end up liking that one more because of the subject matter, but we'll see.
Yeah.
We will.
Yep. That's for sure. Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with whatever. Yeah, I just kind of, I think at least from what I am thinking, especially what you were saying, it's like, oh, because of changes and how things are, you know, it's like these are bottle episodes and they might potentially just basically don't really mean anything to season 11 or how things go forward. You know, they're just might like, hey, they're just like little extra webisodes, insights, hey, so we can at least have Walking Dead on, you know, and not be like, oh, we're going for another, you know, 6 to 8 more months of like nothing. But I mean, I do know that Princess is a, continue, like at this point, she's a not like a big character, but a character in the comics, which I know they are following. So it's like she still has some role and something more of her story, but this probably changed a lot of things of how they maybe would have chose to, you know, introduced her and then how they played her off. So it's like she still got something there more that we just haven't seen yet.
Right.
So it's, you know, it, just because I know of that part is just like she's in the comics and she has, you know, like in a role, she, you know, has like a big, you know, like not a good relationship, but you know, she has relationships with our main characters that still have yet to be, you know, shown. So what they decide to do with that, you know, how they're doing it, maybe this was some way that they were like, oh, since we couldn't really do it a proper way, we'll give her some kind of, you know, episode focusing on her just so we can let everybody know that, oh yeah, she's got issues and something's crazy, whatever. And then, you know, that'll play off. Cause I know in the comics, she had a, interaction in a relationship with Michonne, but maybe that's going to be something that Maggie's going to be playing. So, you know, we don't know. So hopefully we get more things about Princess, but I just, again, it's like, yeah, it's just everything. This is all new territory for everyone. You know, none of this was, I'm sure in their minds was like supposed to be the way it was, but you know, again, we're getting some Walking Dead, getting some interesting, you know, tidbits, like the whole last episode with Daryl, you know, and like just seeing, oh, he, you know, he was gone for after Rick died, or supposedly, and then what was he doing? And we got this whole, like that whole backstory, and it was like, hey, that's, you know, that's fun, you know, it's like good, it's cool information, just whatever. So I don't know. I just hope that, you know, whatever we get with the last two more episodes, and then we get into Fear, I'm sure World Beyond will come after that. I like what she, like, you know, Silas, I guess, had some, you know, it's because we did get to spend more time with him. So I can definitely, it's like, I kind of say like, yeah, like we got to know Silas more than we've gotten to know Princess. So it's like you could care a little bit more about what was going on with him because we were shown that and we had time to invest in him. Princess kind of got an interruption right in the middle of all her stuff. And now we're just kind of like, oh, here a year later, we'll start giving you more info.
Yeah. And when I heard that, I was like, who's Silas again? I was like, oh, now it just clicked in. Oh, you're talking about World Beyond. It's like, yeah. Oh, okay.
Which was, yeah, it was basically kind of the last, well, with Fear, but like, yeah, it was, yeah, kind of the.
I've tried to push that away in my mind.
Oh, the kids show will come back. We'll probably maybe talk about it.
Oh, joy.
All right. Thank you so much, Renee. All right, our next feedback comes from Glenn is from Toronto. It's a Brian, do you want to take care of this?
Yes, sure. So Princess has had some trauma in her life with such a sad and tragic backstory and thus has shaped her coping mechanisms. She did say when Ezekiel, Yumiko, and Eugene first encountered her in that street, she did ask if they were real. So an inkling of her mindset and her imaginary people to assist her with reasoning out a situation or to solve a problem. Also, the counting and rattling off city names starting with C onwards sort of calms her fear in face of adversity or a troubling situation and makes her mind just concentrate on the numbers or cities and block out the terror and fear. Worth saying, those are state capitals for those of you that aren't from US, or like in my case, I'm not from the US, but I've lived here for 20 something years, so I know it. Those train car slates whispered or shouted back to The Walking Dead season 4, episode 16A, and season 5, episode 1, Sanctuary, as I mentioned. Terminus with Rick, Daryl, Michonne, and Carl were herded into the train car ordered by Gareth in sort of direct relationship number-wise to Ezekiel, Yumiko, Eugene, and Princess. Just a question, who is the ringleader? Archer, Samurai, and Kid in this second group? That's a good question. Both groups were looking for a better place. Hopefully the Commonwealth works out better than the Sanctuary did. Indeed. I wonder if there's a comparison there, too, with the imaginary Ezekiel coming through the top of the train car, just like the tear gas grenade that was thrown through the top when the survivors were preparing and expecting them through that sliding train door at Terminus. So even Eugene and Yumiko were illusions, I hear from Talking Dead, at least thought those were real. So Princess didn't even get out through that plank escape route. Only the beginning and the end, with them lined up with hoods over their heads, the interrogation and the guard bringing her food, and the resulting assault was real. Looking back on the episode, it's hard to really distinguish real from fantasy in some cases. Need to give it another rewatch. The writers duped us as the soldiers / guards were talking into the radios that they'd seen something and were checking when Princess was hiding around the side of the train Eugene was supposedly in. Interesting, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bring up much more of a comparison with the Terminus than I had given it, but good on you, I would say. And go ahead.
No, I was just saying it's like that was kind of my first like thing that popped in my head was like, oh, train cars. Oh, where have we seen this? Oh, Terminus. And then kind of that. But then, you know, that like you guys got the Fight Club thing. And I kind of was like, oh, I know that there was like the whole personality thing, but I didn't see the Talking Dead. So I don't know, you know, I didn't see them mention anything about that. So it just kind of wasn't really clicking. But Terminus right. definitely was, just because I was like, oh, they called it, you know, train car A, B, C, and just, you know, just the whole situation. So I almost like wrote in my notes being all like, oh yeah, they just decided to like, hey, let's just redo Terminus, but without the
yeah
cannibals.
Without the barbecue.
Yep.
But I agree with you, Glennis, about the it's hard to distinguish real from fantasy in this episode. And mm-hmm. you know, that's why I say, like, even the interrogation, we know that an interrogation existed, and she was probably stripped during that interrogation, I imagine. But the rest of it, we don't know. I mean, he may have been much more accommodating, much more, you know, nice about it, and she interpreted him being more antagonistic. So we don't know. Then again, he may have been just a jerk. So,
yeah. all right. Well, thank you, Glennis, for your feedback. That's the rest of our feedback we got today. So I guess let's just go into ours. And, I mean, I didn't really have any more to say than what we already talked and what, you know, everybody else kind of commented on, but did you have anything extra, Brian?
Well, I just was noticing, you know, we mentioned Eleanor Matsuura. And when I wrote it in the notes, I hadn't heard a confirmation that she, in fact, wasn't in the episode, but I had since heard it that she wasn't in the episode. But I had noticed how many of the supporting cast we are seeing in the credits every week that we still haven't seen at all in 10C. And that would be Kellen McAuliffe, Nadia Hilker, Cassidy McClincy, although in Cassidy's sake, she did one of the narrations at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Lauren Ridloff, and we haven't seen Kristen Serratos either. And for that matter, we haven't seen her in many episodes, like going back to season 10 proper. And we know that she's been busy filming that, was it Serena? Is that what it's called?
Selena.
I knew that was wrong as soon as I said it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, in the case of, Eleanor Matsura, we know that she lives in, the UK. Nadia Hilker, I don't know if she lives in, I know she's German, so I don't know if she lives in Germany or not, but I'm assuming she lives in Europe somewhere. Not sure about Lauren Ridloff, where she's from, but Cassidy McClincy is, I think, from Atlanta, so, like, but she did do the narration, so at least she's had that. Mm-hmm. But there's certainly been some cast members that we haven't seen yet. So we know, like, we haven't seen a lot of Cooper Andrews, but we know he's going to be in the next episode. So I took him off the list, but yeah, so that's all I had.
Yeah. And I was trying to look to see if I had anything else to really add, but that pretty much covered everything. And what we've already talked about. Enjoy the episode. Want to see more.
Yeah, and I've said my piece and counted to three, so.
All right, well, then that will lead us to news, ratings, and info.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
All right. Well, I wish I had better news as far as the ratings are concerned, but when it comes to ratings, ratings are down again. I didn't even have to signal you. They weren't down a lot, but The Walking Dead did reach another all-time low with 0.56 in the 18 to 49 demo with 2.113 million viewers. And that is down from last week's 0.57 in the 18 to 49 with 2.170 million viewers. So not down a lot, but still down a little, and as such, it is lower. So I didn't check. I'm going to check again. I made that one comment the other week about the 25 to 54 and the, was it the 50 and over, just to see. And let's just see how they did in that. They, 50 and over, it still was over a 1. It got a 1.13 in the 50 and over. 25 to 54, it got a 0.84. So, like I say, you know, we may have mentioned this when you were still out, Kyle, but there's kind of been like a generational transition of The Walking Dead. So, I think we may be seeing people that couldn't watch the show because we were too young are now falling into the 18 to 49 demographic. And that unfortunately affects the ratings of the show because, those people did not take a liking to the show or, you know, never got into the show until they were older. And, you know, so it's just a thought, you know, maybe they'll pick it up. Or if they did pick it up, they picked it up on streaming. So
right.
Or the rest of the fan base is just graying and has now dropped into the next demographic category.
Right, exactly. Pretty much everyone, I'd say, has dropped into the 25 to 54, and old fogies like LT and me are in the 50 and over. So, but anyway, going into the Talking Dead, it got a 0.18. in the 18 to 49 with 0.808 million. So in other words, 808,000 viewers, and that's up from last week's 0.16 and 696,000 viewers. So it was up slightly. I don't exactly know why it was up compared to last week. Yay. But it was up. So
We'll take our ups where we can get them.
Yeah. And then we have the parrots. As far as the parrots, things are pretty much unchanged from last week. The Walking Dead is sitting at number 6. The order of the things have changed. Like Game of Thrones actually went up quite a bit from, I don't know where it was at last week, but I guess there's some spinoff talk. So Game of Thrones actually shot back up again. But anyway, The Walking Dead sitting at number 6 with 45.1 times the average demand of a show. And number 1 yet again is SpongeBob. So number 2, Attack on Titan. So that's it as far as the parrots. About this episode, first of all, on Talking Dead, the guests were Kari Payton, Paola Lazzaro, co-writer of the episode Vivian Say, and comedian Ron Funches. And again, it was really interesting why, like, these six episodes have been interesting for Talking Dead for me personally, because I love to hear the writers and why they did what they did. And, you know, we've been able to hear from the showrunners for certain episodes, but not so much for the writers of the episodes. So these have all had the writers in them. And in this episode, she talked about, Vivian Say talked about, like, why the whole princess, like, switch was pitched to Angela Kang, and why it was done the way that it was done. Like, when it was pitched by her and Julia Ruckman going to Angela Kang, they told her, you can't know the story. Like, so Angela Kang had to hear the story or read the story blind, and not be told what it was about until she read it. So it was because otherwise it would kill the story, right? Like, if she knew that it was kind of a Fight Club thing, it would kill the story. And yeah, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, why I heard, also, you know, why it focused on, Princess and why she was a good example. And of course, they talked a lot about, like, how she's been a great addition to the cast, which I agree with, and how she's kind of been great in that role. Like, Kari Payton was, like, just, you know, saying great things about her and all that stuff. Interesting thing, according to The Talking Dead, this is the first episode of The Walking Dead, and I think any of the episodes where no one died, no one alive or dead died. And that's pretty much true, because we're only, you know, two zombies that were actually in Princess's head. And so other than that, nobody died. So that was interesting. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's a first.
Yeah.
Well, and that was the thing. It was the funniest in memoriam ever, because in memoriam was what died.
Yeah, and it's going to come back. So it's going to reanimate for next week. As far as, we actually did have a couple of news items this week. Announced, they were both announced on the 19th, so Friday the 19th, and I completely missed them, but another podcast brought them up, and I went and looked them up and went, oh, okay. So AMC Networks is developing a digital original scripted series set in the Walking Dead universe that ties into the 6th season of Fear the Walking Dead. It is a digital series called Dead in the Water, and it tells the story of a submarine crew fighting for survival, cut off from the surface world just as the apocalypse hits, becoming a nuclear-fueled, walker-filled death trap with no way out. And the ongoing season 6 of The Walking Dead spinoff revealed Morgan Jones Lenny James holds the key to a beached submarine that is spray painted with a cryptic message when it washes up in Galveston, Texas. Fear showrunners Andrew Chambliss and Ian Goldberg will produce Dead in the Water alongside executive producer and Walking Dead Universe Chief Content Officer Scott M. Gimple. And the series is scripted by Jacob Pinion, who wrote Fear Season 6 episode Damage from the Inside, as well as 6 episode miniseries The Althea Tapes, which was another digital thing for Season 5, featuring subjects of the videos Althea was doing. So basically, this sounds like another kind of like Flight 462 or Red Machete or something like that. And what I read about it is, in addition to this, it's, you know, these things are going to appear not just on AMC, but will be available on YouTube and, you know, various other Facebook, Instagram, you know, pretty much anywhere where you watch video. So they'll be available and not just on AMC Plus or AMC.com.
The commercial looked really good.
Did it?
Yeah.
So there's that. And they also mentioned some of the things that they're working on, like they're going to bring back the Bottomless Brunch with Coleman. That was listed as a good example of what they're planning, because that, I guess, has been available on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and, you know, several other places where you can get the video. So it's going to be a similar thing. So it'll, you know, be on AMC Plus and AMC Premiere, and but also YouTube and you know, various other ways of getting it. So in addition, AMC Networks and Complex Networks announced a content partnership that will allow advertisers to leverage the strength and reach of AMCN's popular programming and its established fan communities through Complex Networks' food, pop culture, food, and fashion programming pillars. You can tell this is a press release. Specific applications will include custom series, integrations, brand promos, and truly original ideas that reach viewers and potential customers through these widely popular properties. The first plan, this is where it gets to The Walking Dead. The first plan execution combines The Walking Dead universe with a show I've never heard of it, maybe you guys have, with First We Feast to create the original series called Run the Dish. Each episode of this unconventional cooking show will feature apocalypse-inspired dishes created by Complex celebrity chefs and The Walking Dead universe talent. So what does that mean? Dog food souffle?
Yeah, can of three-year spoiled, like, yeah, sweet corn.
Yeah, rusted cream corn.
I was thinking, okay, so maybe they're going to do like, well, that's a different food show. But say, okay, you know, okay, Wolfgang Puck, here's a can of sardines, some baked beans, and some 3-year-old hardtack. Go!
Yeah, Iron Chef apocalypse style.
Of course, I have to laugh, Brian, when you said pop culture, food, and fashion programming.
Yeah. I'm going,
you yeah. know, and now how to dress for the apocalypse.
Yep.
The apocalypse of the Kardashians.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we know how, we can only hope how that would turn out.
Their bodies would not decompose.
No. Or they would decompose into silicone gel. So anyway, that's all I had for news. So...
All right. Well, thank you for that. To interact with us, we want to encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Walking Dead TTM. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, and you can find us at facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadTTM. You can also email us at walkingdead@talkthroughmedia.com. And we also have a feedback form, and you can find that at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. We also love to get voicemails, so please send more. We love it. You can do that and call 216-232-6146. Also, all of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just click, just search for Talk Through Media, and remember to subscribe and click the bell to get notified when we have new videos. The videos do go up first before the podcast does. So if you want to hear it as soon as I finished editing it and publishing, that is the best way to do it. All right. LT, you want to take support? How do you support us?
Well, you can like and review the Talk Through Media Facebook page at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. One of the best ways you can support us is through our Patreon, and that's www.patreon.com/walkingdeadtalkthrough. We want to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Renee Murray, and Lawrence Todd.
Who's that guy?
Oh, you're going to do it this time. You can subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. While you're there, give us a rating or review. You can also leave us a review at podchaser.com. There you can rate individual episodes or the whole podcast. And remember, share our posts on Facebook and Twitter when we post them, and tell a friend. Word of mouth is one of the best ways to get us new listeners.
And if you are looking for me and other people in the network, I do a podcast with Ruthie, who was on our first episode of 10C, called the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. And we have a Patreon there. It's at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And you can go straight to our episodes by going to StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com. That redirects you into talkthroughmedia.com's section on Star Trek Discovery. And you can go to our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTM podcasts. Got that S on the end.
Yes.
Our next episode is Season 10, Episode 21 of The Walking Dead, titled Diverged, written by a former producer of the show, Heather Belson, and her last episode on the show was Season 6, Episode 6, Always Accountable, and that was the first Dwight and Sherry episode, one that I didn't like very much. But aside from that, there was one of the episodes she did that I did like. So, directed by David Boyd, and the description, according to Google, is at the lowest point in their friendship, Daryl and Carol come to a fork in the road and head their separate ways. Carol returns to Alexandria while Daryl stays on the road, each going into their own type of survival mode. So, until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm LT.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.